The following is a paid program and does not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of Cumulus Media and FM 103.7 and AM 710 KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk. Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Oh boy, off to another exciting week. So much stuff happening, just all across the board. And if you haven't experienced any of that yet, well, you're lucky. Wanted to get into the sci-fi stuff and the PSI stuff. Basically, the real thing right now, they've discovered that we're just a little older than we thought. Instead of the human condition being part of our reality starting about 200,000 years ago, no, humans, they have discovered now, started 300,000 years ago, just a few hundred thousand more. Apparently, this new discovery in Morocco, they found five bodies, the bones of five people in Marrakesh. And that's a basic ballpark. Anyway, one way or the other, it means history books are going to have to be written, and a whole lot of debate going on coming out of that. I thought that was okay. That's the terrestrial news. Now, the extraterrestrial news gets even better. Asgardia, have you heard about this? This is the new colony that will be rotating, you know, hovering around, going around the planet. I think they've got 180,000, the last I checked, 180,000 people who want to be Asgardians. They've already pledged their allegiance to Asgardia. There's going to be a press conference coming up the 13th. These are people who think very positive, all right? they're optimistic. What's going to happen when everybody out here is at war and Asgardia needs some more water? Okay. Anyway, I like the fact that they're actually kind of, okay, let's just plow forward. We're going to be here and we're going to plan on branching out. So don't have details. The press conference starts first and then they're going to clue everybody else in who wants to be a general citizen. The press conference is for accredited media and I'll wait for the public stuff later on. Anyway, that one was, I don't even know how I found that. But the other stuff, that's the extraterrestrial stuff, of course, there's this, the one that sounds the most legit, the astrophysicist who saw something over Chile, and this is a V-shaped object. And this is a guy who have been for 40 years looking at the sky and being able to identify pretty much everything that he saw. So he has a little bit of credibility. And he said this time, he has no clue what it was. It looked like it would accelerate and then it would stop for about 5 minutes and then accelerate again. And at first he thought it was the Japanese satellite. And then he realized, well, the time difference wasn't going to work. Plus, it didn't make sense that it produced two tails like a comet. So in other words, that's the V. Anyway, that one is fabulous. The UFO sighting hotspot is a fun website to check out for all of these other things. There's another one. This is an eyewitness who said she saw a hologram over the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And they said, well, she seems to be very, you know, sound mind, calm, cool, collected. Seemed like she was not, you know, freaking out about what she saw. But she said that it created some kind of a hologram technology like Project Bluebeam. All right, so Google. They also have a video. All right, so she's talking about it, which is kind of, that helps when you have somebody actually being interviewed or giving you their some way, shape, or form testimony. Blue Star Kachina. Is this what's happening? There are three different pictures, photos, with a little round orb, sphere, blue thing in it. And one was in Arizona, another in Spain, and the most recent one a couple of weeks ago, New Hampshire. So something blue is beginning to be photoshopped into pictures all across the planet. No, we don't know. I'm just saying we got to figure those out. So a lot of stuff happening in terms of, you know, just mind-boggling. And I wanted to get into some of this stuff. We've talked to Lance Munguia, who's one of the people getting the movie together, Third Eye Spies, about all the psychic spy stuff that was going on with the CIA. I wanted to talk with Blynn Olivieri. She has all of the legacy, basically, that Ingo Swann left behind, all of his works. She's the head of special collections at the University of West Georgia, the Ingram Library. And Ingo happens to be one of the people that they have been, they've got all of his collected works, arts, and writings. And a lot of this stuff, he wanted to make it public because it's his view that everybody is psychic and that it's just a matter of figuring out how it works. And so, you know, even if you don't experience it 24/7, you may have little moments of intuition and, you know, hit on something that, oh, well, I knew I needed to be there. But that's the thing with his stuff, is that there's so much of it that it makes it worth, you know, pursuing and investigating and exploring to see, well, what were the breadcrumbs that he left behind? And he's a very well-documented psychic, and that also lends a little credibility, too. So we'll get into some of that when we talk with her. The other thing, the Wendy's Coffee House. I post a lot of this stuff on Wendy's Coffee House, so you can follow if you would like. You can follow, and you can find out, like, the little thing about pets having good germs, so it's good to have a pet because then you are kind of inoculated. So who needs probiotics when you've got a good cat and dog? Are they bringing all the stuff inside and helping you improve your immunity? There's also the guy who decided that he wanted to get in shape. He wanted to do something good at the same time, so he adopted a donkey. Now he's got this donkey training to do a marathon. And there's also some sci-fi stuff. There are several YouTube channels that have really, really good short sci-fi films. One of the ones I posted recently, Zari, and this one actually has a little golden retriever in it playing a role, but it's a study of what would happen if we had little robots as assistants, and they would become sentient, but by the time they did, their two-year warranty was up, and they would have to be rehomed, maybe. Okay, so it's a fascinating study. Anyway, stuff like that, that's a Wendy's Coffee House. And if you have anything you'd like to, you know, clue me into, that'd be great. But right now, there's a lot of stuff going on in terms of PSI. There's still more experimenting happening. And it didn't really stop with the Stargate program. It just went a different direction. And I've got a little bit of that information, too, on the Wendy's Coffee House website. Just because I think this stuff is fascinating. I've had my own experiences. Just with all sorts of stuff that doesn't have any general or any regular category. It's just basically an anomaly. And this nightlight thing I've experienced for the last now 20 years is something that there is no real explanation for it. It happens. It's visible. It's visual. It's been seen by lots of people. And yet it doesn't make sense. And there's no way to really explain it. But when you experience something like that, then all bets are off. You realize that reality is much larger than we have any clue, and it's fun to play with the unknown. So coming up next, my guest talking about Ingo Swann, the collection, and why Ingo is so and continues to be so extraordinarily fascinating on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, everybody's psychic. It's just a matter of figuring out how to use it. Ingo Swann, extraordinary psychic, called the godfather of remote viewing. And he had a huge collection of writings and artwork and all sorts of fascinating content that he left for the public. And so now, in addition to Ingo Swann's estate, there is a place you can go to check out some of this stuff. I'm talking with Blynn Olivieri. She's head of special collections at the University of West Georgia, the Ingram Library. And Blynn, thank you. I appreciate your time. You have not just his collection, but a treasure trove of a lot of fascinating content that you keep there. So thank you.
That's right, Wendy. Thanks so much for having me on your show tonight.
I wanted to just get into the Ingo Swann collection to start out with, but before, you know, there, I also saw that you had Stanley Krippner, his work as well, or, you know, coming, and this is, for you, this has to be like a little treasure.
It is. I mean, it's really such a great thing to have a breadth of collections that speak to a lot of different researchers and researcher interests, and our parapsychology collections definitely being one of them.
Okay, we have to mention the political stuff since that's, you know, a hot topic, especially. You have that too.
We have that too.
I saw on Twitter. I saw. Was it Newt Gingrich?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have great stuff in our special collections. I mean, we have tremendous rare book, rare map collections. We have regional history about the western part of Georgia state, and our university archives, extensive political collections, including 5 U.S. congressional collections, all the way down to mayoral papers. We have several different psychology collections, well, 2, one being humanistic psychology and the second being our parapsychology collection.
What do people visit the most? What is the most popular?
I think Ingo and Newt could be just about tied.
Oh, okay. Yes. Science over political science, and then psi tops it all. PSI. I wanted to know, for one thing, the family also has his stuff. Is there still some that is not included in the collection? Is there still another place that houses some of his works?
Well, we have really his papers and his book collection. I know that there's some people who have a book or two from Ingo, so some are still in private hands, but we have the preponderance of his book collection. And then his artworks were given to the American Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore, and his artworks were also recently shown at Leslie Lohman Gallery in L.A. This past summer. So the main repositories for Ingo's oeuvre is the University of West Georgia, where his papers and book collection are, which I administer, and then his artworks at the American Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore.
Okay. Have you read any of Ingo's work?
Have I read his books? Absolutely.
I just thought,
yes.
Okay. You have a favorite?
I thought that Reality Boxes was fascinating. And I think Ingo, if you know anything about him, his thoughts and his experiences really resonate with a lot of people. And just that, you know, that we sort of as humans tend to box ourselves in, or there's cultural, societal factors that sort of box a person in, and that really human consciousness is capable of so much more, and that it's kind of breaking out of these boxes. That is just extremely astute, I mean, on a number of different levels. So that really resonates with me in particular.
There was a film recently, a showing that has the new film, Ingo Swann, A Life Gone Wild, and that was you were a presenter at the Philip K. Dick Festival, and that one won the short film category. How was it? Nobody else has seen it.
Oh my gosh, I can't say enough about A Life Gone Wild. It is an incredible film. So what was shown on that night is 18 minutes of the film. And the film is directed by Marianne Billum, who's a practicing remote viewer, long, long, long time friend of Ingo. And she really understands Ingo very well and has approached sort of Ingo was such a multifaceted talent. I mean, you cannot encapsulate Ingo in one film, yet Marianne has kind of broken it into different facets and done so in such an incredibly artistic manner that it's just gorgeous. And I think Ingo would have been thrilled with it.
Okay. What I want to... real quick, yeah. I want to go back and just recap for anyone who's listening who isn't familiar, because I'm talking about this and you're talking about this like I'm assuming that people know. But if you're not familiar with Ingo Swann, born September 1933, Telluride, graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Biology in 1955, enlisted in the Army, served in Korea and the Far East. He came back to the States, didn't really settle quite. He worked as an artist and did some artwork, but he kind of floated around. And then in 71, he was in an experimental photography session. This is something that was designed to capture people's psychic energies. And so they were in a blackened room. You know, you might have heard it called aura photography. Anyway, they got a photograph, and it showed a ball of light above his head. And so with that, he continued to get a little bit of attention from other people and became aware of his psi abilities. And then that's when Dr. Hal Puthoff and the Stanford Research Institute began to get him into their program. In 1972, he and Russell Targ started working with experiments, and that was just the beginning of how he later became involved in experiments using what he called coordinated remote viewing. So, and then this project Stargates, what everybody's familiar with. But I just wanted to back up and say, okay, this is how he got his start, and this is an overview of what, you know, this is why this guy is an enigma, because of little things like that, that he began to gradually become more known for his psychic ability.
That's right. And I have one clarification. The family went back and contacted Westminster College in Salt Lake City, Utah. And in fact, he didn't get two bachelor's degrees. He just got one in biology. And somehow, you know, this myth, and maybe Ingo himself perpetuated it, that he had a degrees in both biology and art. But apparently it's just biology.
Well, you know, who's counting?
Record, Wendy.
Who's counting? He's an artist, you know? It's embellishment. Yeah, a little extra color there. Well, the thing, though, that I think is so fascinating is that his embracing of this and saying, look, this is real. This is something that anyone can do. And the quote I got from the state was that psychic perceptions can no longer be discredited. The only question now is remaining how they work. And that part of it, I think, it helped to see all the papers that the CIA released on the experiments that they did with their Stargate program, and it gave a lot of credit to Uri Geller and Ingo Swann and the other folks who were involved in that program, who for years had kind of had to tease and, you know, just, oh, you know, I might have done this, or I might have been involved in that, and, oh, I don't know if that's real or not. They had to really talk around it. And he, even when he wrote the book Penetration, and that's when he's talking about the ETI, extraterrestrial connection, he had to be careful what he used and how he alluded to things, because these things hadn't yet begun become public, and not the ET thing, but the psychic stuff that he was involved with the military. And he kind of goes into that and makes it very clandestine, and probably embellishes a bit there, but he has to.
Right. And I think one thing that is so interesting is that, you know, there was sort of this testing of, and you see it at those beginning experiments in 1972 at Stanford Research Institute, were psychokinesis experiments, PK. You know, can humans affect change? You know, one of the early experiments was, could, you know, Ingo raise the temperature of water in this container, kind of thing. And so there's been some level of various types of, not just Ingo, but others who have tested whether or not these sort of psi abilities exist. And then there's this layer or level of how could these psi abilities be applied. And that's what's really fascinating, in that Ingo's work really focused those psi abilities on military applications, as you were explaining, like the spying and being under contract from, you know, 1972 to about 1992 for various military branches and commercial aerospace firms. But there's a lot of different applications out there, and the more I learn about remote viewing, and, you know, I was already familiar with it from a criminal justice aspect. We hear about, you know, psychics being used by police departments to help provide some information towards potential solving of criminal cases. But there's a lot of different applications as well.
Okay, hold on. We're going to take a quick break. Got to do some news and some commercials. We're talking with Blynn Olivieri. She's the head of special collections, Ingram Library at University of West Georgia. Ingo Swann is the topic, and he's an extraordinary, extraordinary inspiration for a lot of people. It might be for you if you're interested in sci stuff. So stick around. We're going to talk a little bit more about the remote viewing. Wendy's Coffee House, Talk Radio, KCMO.
KCMO.
I'm waking up.
Amazing. When you think of somebody who can tell you what's going on somewhere else, on the other side of the planet, without ever having been there, maybe not even speaking the language, and giving you an accurate perspective on what's in a room and, you know, who might be involved in that stuff that's in that room, it's mind-boggling. But this is what they were trying to do when they were working with the Stargate program and the SRI experiments that they were trying, 1972, did you say, through 1992, almost 20 years. And it's just some of the stuff I read with Uri Geller, and, you know, they ask him basically if he could stop a heart. And then some of the other things I read that he was able to do and confessed, you know, said, yes, this is what I did. It's just extraordinary. And to think that this is what Ingo is saying, these types of activities with psi abilities, everyone has something of that in them in some way, shape, or form. It's just that we haven't been schooled or educated or encouraged. And in a lot of ways, we've been discouraged. So here we are talking about the guy who's the godfather of remote viewing. What did you get from reading his stuff about how that, you know, how he interpreted that? And how that made him feel, you know, I guess, inspired to get this information out to the public, to a wider viewing audience, so people could understand this isn't just a one-off. This isn't just a fluke. This is stuff that we can do.
You know, Ingo was so prolific and really, I would say, if not a genius, near genius.
Yeah.
And I don't say that lightly. And he thought deeply. He was continually active in creating absolutely gorgeous works of art. He had an incredibly rich social circle and social connections. He was as I've heard from people, a fabulous cook. He was just quite a person, and I think that something in Ingo didn't feel like he had to conform.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's another real lesson that should be taken from Ingo that has been very meaningful to me as well, is that it's okay to be different. You should just, you know, be yourself, and that he tested himself, and he tried different things, and he was, I think, really ultimately working for what he thought was the good. And, you know, people would send him manuscripts and letters pleading for Ingo to read them, and Ingo, for the most part, really took the time to respond and be helpful and provide, you know, good critiques of their manuscripts. He was a person that felt, I think, some sense of responsibility, and that he had thought so deeply about, you know, psi abilities from many different perspectives, and, you know, one from the perspective of religion, for example, that he felt like he needed to share. And what he wrote was so unique. I mean, there were other people writing and you know, engaged in psi investigations at that time. But Ingo has a sort of a populist touch in that he can write things and make complex ideas and practices very clear.
Well, the experiments he did, and this is a remote viewing, 1973, he said that the planet Jupiter had rings. And, you know, at that point, from the stuff that I read, he's like, I'm picking this up, and this is okay, and this is what I see. And just, you know, that's it. That's it. And this is 1973. So Voyager's probe visits in 1979. Well, I'll be darned. Guess what? There's the rings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one thing that I, picking up on our topic earlier of what kind of applications are there. And, of course, I talked about the military applications. But, you know, Ingo, as well as a number of different people that he worked in concert with did these remote viewings of different planets. So, you know, Jupiter 1973, as you mentioned, he did that with Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ and Harold Sherman. And in 1974, they did Mercury and then the Moon and then Mars in 1975 and then another Mars in 1976. Actually, two more in 1976 in January and June. And so these were sort of, they tried different controls on these planetary RV sessions. So one of the approaches is that Harold Sherman would be in the Midwest in his home in Arkansas, and Inga would be in New York, and they'd be sort of these judges or people who were doing the recordings and kind of attesting to the validity of this experiment at the with both Ingo and Harold. And they'd synchronize their time, and they would launch to whatever planet they were going to at the same time. And then they both gentlemen would write and draw what they saw. And there was, you know, this pretty remarkable alignment with Harold Sherman on his side and Ingo Swann, you know, what their reports were. And, of course, in those days, there was no internet, you know.
Yeah.
Later, they would touch base by phone or by letter and sort of analyze the cross-section of what the commonalities were. And there was a lot of commonalities.
See, that's the fascinating thing, too. This is before the internet. So the way that they are, you know, doing their communication, there's a downtime, a lag time. And just you can think how much faster it would be if they had access to the technology that we have now. I also want to get back into the stuff that you have on file, because there was, what, 1,600 titles of his?
Oh, yes. That's exactly right, Wendy. So Ingo has this incredible book library of over 1,600 titles. Most of them are rare and scarce on astrology, UFOs, palmistry, divination, the occult, magic, union studies, psychic warfare, you know, and many of those books are actually inscribed to Ingo.
Okay. Okay.
So, by the author.
Yeah. Those are his personal selections. And the other thing, too, when he got into the extraterrestrial, the, you know, the space intelligences, what did you think about that?
Well, you know, I sort of have suspended judgment on all that, you know, as a librarian who administers a lot of collections and has administered different collections during my career. You know, I just, there's a part of me that is fascinated by the people and the practices, and I end up learning a lot, but I'm not necessarily making judgments.
And that makes sense.
About,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a matter of, this is the information, it's available, and what you make of it is up to you. The thing that is, that I think is so exciting is that these papers are within reach of anybody. You don't
They're open to the public, yes.
Yeah. So, and when they come to visit, because this stuff stays on site, you have a viewing room?
Yes, yes, we do, Wendy.
It makes you feel
so
important.
If I have a minute, I can just share with you a little bit about the extent of Ingo's archive.
Sure.
So it's over 121 boxes of materials, and it includes things like alphabetical files, chronological files, files relating to Ingo's editing of the book Cosmic Art, which he picked up after Dr. Raymond Piper started that book, really back in the 1920s. His planetary remote viewing files, the Stanford Research Institute files and binders associated with all of Ingo's RV sessions that he did with students. That should be fairly complete. It's as complete as we possibly all the materials we got anyway. Mm-hmm. And then there's manuscripts, research, and work files. There's visual arts files and scrapbooks, audiovisual materials, and electronic files.
Okay. So a lot of time if you're going to go spend time in the room.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had a couple of scholars come down to use Ingo's papers not too long ago, and they were there for a solid 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So now that might be his biography is in the works, supposed to be coming out in 2018. Do you know anything?
I don't know that. Yeah, I'm familiar with that project, but I don't know the publication date on that.
Okay. And then are you familiar with it? I'm assuming they were talking about it at the festival.
Yes. Yes.
Along with the book. I mean, the movie.
Yes.
Okay. A Life Gone Wild. Again, that's the name of the documentary. And again, this is starting to make the circuit so people can get an idea of what it entails before the film is released. And right now it already has one award from the Philip K. Dick Film Festival in New York, and it was for the short version of the film. So it won that short film category, which is, of course, it's Ingo Swann. You know, hey, I remember hearing him on Art Bell years ago and thinking, just being so amazed that he could talk about it so casually and just, you know, just one-on-one made it sound so easy and accessible. And just what he did was just no big deal. And I talked to a person who was his literary agent about a practical joke they tried to play on somebody else. It didn't work, but Ingo was all up for it. And so he had a great sense of humor. And he was, I think, self-deprecating in the fact that he didn't make himself out to be larger than life. He just did what he did because it was something that he knew how to do and it worked.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think that's a great statement there.
Okay, so when you're looking at all this stuff coming together and the books that he has, and they also are saying that there are some books that his family, the estate, the publisher is going to release. I think he wrote 10 books, and from what I was trying to get my research here, I think they're planning on re-releasing some of them, the extraterrestrial and human telepathy and the psychic mm-hmm. apparitions of Mary.
The Great Apparitions of Mary, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Of the books that you've read, and you talked about one earlier, what would you recommend for somebody who is just getting familiar with Ingo Swann?
You know, I think a classic is Everybody's Guide to Natural ESP.
Okay, yay!
That's a good one.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's one to kick it all off.
Yes.
Okay. That first came out in 1991. I've got the cheat sheet in front of me. I don't have it memorized.
Right.
So, okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back in just a minute and talk a little bit more. Again, Ingo Swann and his legacy. I'm talking with Blynn Olivieri here on Wendy's Coffee House. All right. Getting into the PSI stuff, psychic. And you heard the recommendation. Blynn Olivieri is my guest. She's the head of special collections at the University of West Georgia, the Ingram Library. A lot of folks have their stuff stored there. You mentioned earlier Newt Gingrich. Then I'm going to be interviewing Stanley Krippner about Rolling Thunder. That's why I wanted to mention him because he's also fascinating. Just a minute, real quick. I went into just to see what, you know, in terms of that book, the ESP book. And he explains in some of that the experiences and the drawings that he came up with where he was trying to figure out if he was getting something or nothing or what it was. And there's one that is perfect because he's got the letters and they are absolutely spot on. If you turn them right side up, they say 7 up. But he drew them upside down. And so he thought maybe it was Arabic or something. And however, when he realized that he did have, it was a hit. It just, you know, it was the... you had to turn it right side up or upside down, but he actually got the connection. And so that was one of the basic, you know, the beginnings that showed him that there may be something to this. And so it's that, you know, that euphoria you get from going, oh my gosh, there's a psychic mind was what he was going. He was like, there it is, right on. So I just wanted to pass along, you know, if you're reading, you're looking for some of these materials, there is if you have your own sense of intuition and your own knowing, then seeing how this works for somebody else and seeing some of the clues that they do, you know, that they add together to make the connection and do the math, it's I think affirming and a way of saying we have so much in common. It's just sometimes we don't get, we're not privy to somebody else's learning process. And he's very clear on how that worked for him. And I think that's incredibly, incredibly helpful if you want to learn this kind of stuff. So I mentioned Stanley Krippner, and you have some of his papers?
Yes, we do. And we do expect more. So we are building our parapsychology collections. We already had a really also significantly sized printed materials or book parapsychology collection even before Ingo's books came to us, at also about 1,600 volumes. So we have a huge collection. And then we have the papers of William G. Roll, who studied poltergeists and was a professor at our university in West Georgia, and Stanley Krippner's papers, and we keep building the collections. And we also have an extensive international parapsychology journals.
Oh, okay.
So, and those are yet to be cataloged. That's in our backlog.
Oh, okay. That's the work.
Basically what we have.
Uh-huh.
But there's over 100 distinct titles in languages from Russian to Japanese.
Okay.
In these parapsychology journals. So we've got a huge amount. And really, I think we're one of the preeminent parapsychology research collections, you know, along with University of Manitoba and the Society for Psychical Research at Cambridge.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that sounds fantastic. That's the thing. When I started getting into this stuff with people who had these extraordinary, anomalous experiences, there are some that I have... some people that I've interviewed and talked to who are from Mexico, and their stuff is in Spanish. And so what I have done is just, you know, Google Translate to go through and read some of it. But it's just, there's a huge world out there of people who are having experiences, but we just don't all speak the same language. And it takes a little while to really figure out, oh my gosh, these are the same kinds of experiences or similar experiences. And we are so much more connected than we realize. And it's great when you're able to compare notes and, you know, connect dots, because these experiences, I think, are telling us that we are a different kind of human being than we have assumed for a long time. We have more have more in our arsenal of abilities that it would be fun to explore and learn and expand, because I think they make us a more connected person to our to everything around us, you know, animals, the world, the planet, the people. It's a very mind expanding experience when you start delving into this. With your your background, William Roll, you mentioned poltergeists, and he was a teacher there.
He was a professor, and then he also appeared on Unsolved Mysteries, television show, over a period of years.
Okay, so he might, he might have a little bit more of a star power there too. I'm not familiar with him, but the fact that he studied poltergeists would be fascinating.
Yes, he's actually pretty well internationally known. We've had researchers come from as far as Japan to look at the William G. Roll papers, and in fact, there's a museum in Georgia that is having an art exhibit on ghosts, and they've borrowed a number of materials from William G. Roll papers, including audio recordings and EKG graphs and a number of different things to be part of the exhibit.
Okay, so it's a lot of fascinating stuff that you guys have there that you can, you know, play with any day of the week. What, in terms of where do you go from here? Do you have a list of people who have donated their belongings that you're looking forward to?
Oh yeah, we have our hopes of other people that might be placed in our papers here, and some discussions are in process.
I was going to say, do you solicit?
Yes, we do. Oh yes.
Okay.
We collect.
Okay.
We collect. And we collect very intentionally and strategically, knowing that these are research collections, and that what the real purpose is that I collect and we collect to make sure that these parapsychologies are not just dumped in the trash, to give evidence that the American government was interested in these sort of psi applications. And that there are people in America who are interested and possess some level of sensitivities and have used them in various ways, mm-hmm. and that to save that record. And, you know, a lot of universities wouldn't be interested in parapsychology collections. But I think in today's world, there's such a trend toward limiting information, either people's access to information. It's not just fake news, but also there's a lot of different algorithms that are going on through the internet, which actually limit what people see. And so from an archival standpoint and from a librarian's standpoint, I want to make sure that I collect a breadth of information that people can access.
Oh, and I think that's fabulous. I like that. The one I wanted to mention here, that this PSI stuff is continuing to, it hasn't been totally wiped out or ignored, because right now the Office of Naval Research calls the program Anomalous Mental Cognition, and they say it's exploring Spidey sense, and they say that on their website. All right. So that is something that may be, you know, part of the legacy of what these guys all started. And it's this interest in psychic phenomena. It's like the story I heard from one of my guests about the guy who was at the Atlanta bombing, and he had a gut that this was the bag that was a problem, and yet he pretty much was destroyed by it, because at first they thought he was, you know, just an attention seeker, and it was that psychic thing that he had that at that point was too weird for anybody to actually believe him. So anyway, I'm so glad that you are in charge, and that Ingo Swann's work is protected and available to the public. And for people to contact you, what's the best way?
You can send me an email at special@westaga.edu. So again, that's special@westaga.edu.
Okay. And I've got your link on the website, too, for Wendy's Coffee House. Thank you. I'm going to let you go. Have a fabulous, fabulous week. And I look forward to hearing more about your expanding collection. Ha ha.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you. And if you're interested in any of this stuff, I posted links on Wendy's Coffee House. But this is where we're going. All right. We're going forward. We got all sorts of wonderful connects and PSI abilities that we have yet to really, really hone. And that's what makes looking toward the future so fascinating and extraordinary and hopeful. All right? So one way or the other, stay curious and drink a little coffee. Right now I'm going to stay with the water. Yeah, early morning call. Till next time, enjoy. See ya.